Welcome to episode 40 of the Half Pointer Podcast. And I am your host, Evan Riggs, joined by my co-host, Dalton Willey, and producer, Johnny Pham. And guys, we are a couple days in the full pads. I have seen a lot of one-on-ones with offensive linemen and defensive linemen on my timeline. I have seen one-on-ones with cornerbacks and receivers. We've all seen the weird Joe Judge getting slightly aroused by the team fight. And also the Giants had a team fight. Dan Campbell drinks more coffee than any one man should. It's been quite the week, Dalton. How are you doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
Well, it's Thursday.
Thursday. You are right.
We've consumed a lot of NFL content, so I'm losing my days as well. All of my priors have been confirmed. Mecole Hardman is a lock for a top 15 wide receiver season. And I am just absolutely ecstatic because at this time of the year, everything that I think is right and nothing can be wrong.
That is certainly one way of thinking about it that I would not recommend anybody else who is listening to this think about it. But it is what it is. Johnny, how are you doing on this fine Thursday evening? You know, I think it's because yesterday was my birthday. I like completely forgot it was also Wednesday, so that was probably the deal there.
Okay, weird flex. Happy late birthday, Evan.
Thank you.
But doing good. Glad today is Thursday and tomorrow is Friday. One day closer to the weekend, so looking forward to that.
Well, we've got a lot to get to tonight. We've got quite a few news and notes that I just wanted to run through real quick. Some more over-unders yet again. And then it's finally time, like I said last week, to get into some of the real stuff here. We've got Dalton and I each, two sleepers and two breakout guys that we're pinpointing for this season. I would tell you how we did last season, but we didn't keep very good track of that. So just assume we did awesome, and we're going to do awesome again this year. But I guess where we have to start, because it literally happened like maybe 3 seconds before we hit the live button, is I guess Chase Claypool caught a long pass, went down, took a long time to walk off the field in the Hall of Fame game, which is currently happening right now. We know literally nothing else at the moment, but just so we get it said on the podcast. Next topic, another somewhat depressing one, is Devontae Smith considered week to week with a knee sprain. I've seen the Eagles coaches kind of try to spin it positively, like, oh, well, he's not going to be out with that. Like, he's only week to week. Like, that's great. It's like, well, I would still rather he not miss, like, most of training camp. I would love him out there. But, Dalton, any takeaways or any concerns with Devontae Smith missing, I guess, at least a couple of weeks here?
Well, yes. I mean, we saw the impact that just a shortened offseason or no offseason had on rookies last year. A lot of rookies took a little longer to get going. You want Devonta Smith developing rapport with a quarterback who notoriously can't hit the mark when he throws the football. So you'd like for them to at least, you know, kind of understand each other's tendencies. And this is a guy who you want him to be as healthy as possible, because his one of the biggest factors to his game is how fast he is and how incredible he is at that. And then this is the concern that some people had about Devonta Smith is,
yep,
he's smaller size, and now if he's going to be taking hits and he's already a little banged up, it's worrisome. And then, I mean, there's just nobody else in this wide receiver room that can even stand out. So the Eagles as a team need him to be very healthy.
Yep, and that takes me right into the next thing here from Philly Voice. This is Jimmy Kimski, I think, who wrote this in his notes. Aside from doing a nice job on punts, Jalen Reagor hasn't stood out at all. Not much more we need to say there, but that is not a great thing to have come out of training camp. We have said, you know, I think we said last week, and we will continue to say, pay more attention to the bad than the good. And this is a very, very bad thing, I would say, to have come out so early in training camp, and for a guy who obviously struggled last year when he was healthy.
Well, and he's fielding punts. You don't want your wide receiver on the special teams.
Generally.
Yeah, it's just not a good look for him at all. And when you're losing reps to Travis Fulgham, who lost reps to Alshon Jeffrey's ghost last season, there's just a whole slew of concerns.
Absolutely. Former Eagle, Carson Wentz, can't get off the Eagles here. I think he already had surgery. I wrote will undergo, but I think that was earlier this week. I think he already had the surgery on his foot. I guess it stems from a previous injury, maybe even like clear back to high school is what I'd seen people allude to. So I guess good thing that hopefully once he has that taken care of, he won't have to worry about it anymore. Bad thing is we have You know, bad thing for him that he's injured, and bad thing for us that we have just the most obnoxious 5 to 12 week timetable that you could possibly have. And then Quentin Nelson has, I guess, the same injury, had the same surgery like a day or two later. So it's just like, okay, the Colts are already kind of burning down right before our eyes, Dalton. What kind of impact does this have? I think the main guys that we'd be concerned with here would be Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman.
Well, they're having a Chargers preseason, which you never want to have. But for me, I've dropped Taylor all the way down to my RB13. He was my RB8 before this. So he's right in that like CH Antonio Gibson range. Mm-hmm. I really just don't want anything to do with him at this point because that offensive line is very suspect. They're starting a left tackle who never graded out well because their starting left tackle, Eric Fisher, is coming off of a torn Achilles. Quentin Nelson is great. He's not going to be there for 5 to 12 weeks. You know, really don't know how long that is.
Did they give the same timeline for him? I didn't even see one attack.
It's the exact same timeline. Okay. And then really the only good player on that offensive line or above average is the center, Ryan Kelly. So you're working backwards there. And then Jacob Eason, Sam Ehlinger. I mean, those guys really, you know, they don't get me going for fantasy, and this team's probably going to be playing from behind. They have a brutal start to season two. I mean, Seahawks, Rams, then the Titans and the Dolphins and the Ravens are their first 5 games. You could see them going 0-5, and if they're in negative game scripts, it's Nyheim Hines season. I think Jonathan Taylor's probably going to have a great end of the season when he gets some of those NFC South beat-up teams like the Jaguars and the Texans. So he's probably going to be one of my midseason trade candidates, but he's probably not on my draft list, just looking at this already.
Yeah, so when it was just Wentz, I was in like full wait-and-see mode, number one, to see, you know, wait, because I don't think anyone is probably drafting until at least, if you haven't drafted yet, you're probably not drafting until the third week of August and then probably the fourth week for a lot of people. But now that it is, because I wouldn't be surprised if the Colts go out and add another veteran quarterback, whether it is, I guess Phillip Rivers has said now that he's going to coach the high school season there. So it won't be him to begin the season. But I don't know, maybe it's trading for Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe Nick, it's Foles. Nick Foles. I mean, I would imagine there are some options there. So I'm kind of waiting to see what happens there and being patient with my ranks. But then when Quentin Nelson goes down too, I think you have to at least, you know, I haven't actually physically adjusted my ranks, but I had Jonathan Taylor 10th. He's probably going to be like 11th, 12th. And then we'll kind of see what happens over the next few weeks if I need to adjust. Because, hey, if Quentin Nelson is back more like that five-week timetable, I mean, he could be back for week one. I mean, we just don't really know, quite frankly. And then, I mean, yeah, Michael Pittman, it's pretty much the same thing, except he is a lot more dependent on what happens with the quarterback than Taylor. Because if it's a disaster at quarterback, it's gonna be, I think, tougher for him early on than Taylor.
Well, and with Pittman, there was a good narrative that he had some similar characteristics to Alshon Jeffrey and that Wentz would target him because of that. And Pittman kind of profiles as a contested catch receiver, kind of one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And if you're starting one of these guys are going to be looking for whoever's open over the middle. You know, the Paris Campbell, the tight ends, they're probably not going to be going for Pittman, who's not getting separation.
We're getting the Sam Ehlinger glowing reports. Which, you know what? I'm rooting for him to be the starting quarterback because I would just like to use the "we're back" on our Twitter, his little video from when he was at Texas, like at least 4 or 5 times when he's playing. Otherwise, I don't think it'd be good for anybody on that offense if he really is their best quarterback right now.
They were not back, in fact, for anybody interested.
Nope, and now they're gone from the Big 12. Kenny Golladay. He got one target in his 7-on-7 that he was participating in on Tuesday. He was stripped. He left the field with trainers. The report now, as of today, is he's going to miss 2 to 3 weeks for a guy who was kind of in that Joe Mixon-esque situation of week to week for almost the whole season last year. Not how you want to start your season, Dalton, if you are interested in or already have Kenny Golladay on your team.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, at least he missed the fight, so he didn't get any punches to the face. But
he didn't have to run gassers either, so yeah. He missed that too. He's probably feels pretty lucky he tweaked his hamstring, for all I know.
Yeah, well, and if anybody's wondering how Giants camp's going, they've had three players retire since it started, and it's been a week.
Jason Garrett had the word "fight" written in Sharpie across his like neckline on his shirt too today when he was giving his presser.
It's a high school football camp. It's insane that that team is coached by who it's coached by. But I'm concerned. It's the same hamstring he injured last season, apparently, reading on some beat reports. And you just – this is the same thing with Hollywood Brown. You don't want soft tissue injuries this early in the season because they can really just nag a whole year. And I'm not concerned about him not getting reps with the offense because he is just by far the second best offensive player on this team behind only Saquon. My concern is just how long this goes on for and if he tries to tough it out. Because this is a coaching staff that's not going to baby him back or make him not play. They're just going to put him out there if he says he's ready to go. I get that impression by the way these coaches are. And he could be one of those guys where he's out there. It's a Julio Jones week where he's a decoy. You know, he doesn't catch a single ball, but he's on there for 80% of the snaps. And you're very frustrated. It is something I'll monitor, though, because there's a lot of value to be gained if he's back on the field and practicing in full 3 weeks before the season starts.
Yeah, It is definitely one that I'm monitoring, probably kind of like Jonathan Taylor, where I'm bumping him down maybe a few spots for right now and monitoring it very closely as we approach draft time. And obviously, as I am also monitoring Saquon Barkley and his PUP or not PUP status as we get closer to draft season here. And I'm glad you mentioned Hollywood Brown because, yeah, he's in the same situation and it's even – more harmful, I think, for a guy like him and his draft stock for fantasy football because he is a guy who was already being drafted as a bench guy. And it's like, okay, do you want to take a chance on a speed receiver who was up and down last year, going to be up and down this year, and already has a soft tissue injury? I think that throws a major wrench into anybody who wanted Hollywood Brown on their team at that value this year.
Yeah, especially on a team where they have three new wide receivers and they don't pass a lot already. His role and his volume are very much in question.
Let me tell you, when Sammy Watkins is your healthiest receiver, you have some issues on your team. Oh, Dalton, have you seen this? I included this one late. I didn't put the actual tweet in here because I wanted, if you haven't seen, have you seen the Joe Burrow report from today?
I have. Well, I saw yesterday that he wasn't practicing in contact and
Well, okay. So I don't know. Actually, so maybe you haven't seen this. This was from yesterday, but it's not that. So this is from The Athletic. This is from their beat writers, like practice report. Joe Burrow says it's just not good right now. Throws that felt like layups last year are dropping harmlessly away from receivers or easily broken up by multiple defenders. There might be a multitude of reasons for the struggles, but this has been ugly. At one point, pressure pushed into his face, and Burrow lifted his leg into the air almost to avoid any accident with the closed pocket. It makes you wonder if the knee is still in his head, but that's strictly guesswork. The bottom line is there's no way to say his play looks comfortable at this point, and this isn't at all what you have seen from Burrow, even in the early camp moments of last season. Nobody is saying it won't turn around. In fact, it almost certainly will soon. But if we are looking at Tuesday and we are looking at a quarterback who went 5 of 12 with one completion longer than 10 yards against a rush trained not to get near him. Not great, Dalton. What's your takeaway from that bit of news from that report there?
And we talked about this about a week or so ago where he was one of the guys we're really worried we're wrong about. Mm-hmm. You temper expectations because it's camp, and if you're missing throws in camp, it's better to miss those now than later. So that's good. The concerning part is he's putting his leg up, and I also saw in short yardage situations, they weren't putting him in practice. And that's concerning too because it makes you think his rehab isn't as far along as we believed it was, and you just don't want to see him suit up out there. That Bengals offensive line is still questionable, and if he has pressure in week one and he's just throwing it away, I mean, that entire offense and their three wide receivers and even Joe Mixon, they all take a big step back if Joe Burrow's not playing at least a mediocre level for NFL play.
Yeah, so I think this at least kind of raises makes me raise my eyebrow a little bit and pay closer attention here. I was already paying close attention anyway to Burrow and his rehab and word coming out of Bengals camp. But now I am very much interested in watching their preseason games and seeing how he looks for myself. And if he comes out and looks great, then it's like, okay, you know, kind of deep breath. If it comes out and looks bad, I still am not sure it's going to be like DEFCON 1, but it just, the more evidence starts to add up, at some point we will have to probably adjust his rank and some of those other Bengals ranks too. But I just think it's worth noting for right now that it's not exactly roses coming out of Bengals training camp, which that's not usually how it goes. So I just thought it was noteworthy.
Yeah, and always pay attention to the bad, not the good, like we've said all preseason.
Mm-hmm. For sure. On to some over-unders, and this I purposely made just to get contentious on here, maybe get a couple of bets on the board. Dalton, Dak Prescott, his over-under, I got all these from FanDuel this week because they had some more up finally, was set at 4,825.5 passing yards. I'm assuming you're taking the over, but tell me what you're doing here.
So we haven't had any chance to really talk about his injury, and I am incredibly concerned. In fact,
I saw Jay Glazer say it's like more of a baseball injury too, which is a little strange.
Well, and I've read a couple of reports from the Dallas Morning Star that quoted some doctors and said the same thing. And the concerning thing about the type of injury it is, and I'm not a doctor, so don't quote me on any of this, but it seriously affects his throwing motion because his follow through is obviously connected to the push in his back. And when he comes over, it's apparently that's where the effect is coming from. And that's why he felt a pinch in it. And they were saying in the articles I was reading that that baseball pitchers who have this injury can take up to 130 days to fully recover. So yeah,
it's just so tough to know. Cause like all of the early work, cause at first it was like, oh, he's just out for today. Now it's like a couple of week thing. And it's like, well, they're just being super cautious with them. So it's just kind of, we're bit by bit getting more negative. We're hearing more negative about this or potential negative. But it's hard to take that completely out of the picture, but let's try to at least not focus on that too much.
Well, he's down to my QB7.
Okay, I was gonna say this can inform, this obviously can be a factor in your prediction to be completely fair, but also just trying to get a gauge on it. If this really is not that big of a deal, because we really just don't know yet still. But anyway, yeah. Your take on this number here.
I'm taking the under.
Okay.
I have significant concern. I mean,
is it all injury? If there were no injuries, would you have taken the over?
Yeah, I would have taken the over easily. I love Dak when fully healthy. I've talked about him before. He would still be in my top five QBs, my tier one, if not for this injury. But zero camp going on 2 years, you know, I just can't do it. So I took the under because I mean, he might just be one of those guys who gets pegged to somebody who can't keep himself healthy. And now you just have so many more factors that have to go his way. This offensive line has to keep him healthy. He has to stay protected. He's not going to get the reps in he needs in the preseason. And so I'm taking the under just on, 4,825 passing yards is a pretty hard number to reach anyways. He would have to be playing close to the level he was playing at last season. That's a pretty high number, even in 17.
It's a super high number. He's done it one time. He was right around 4,900. I thought I was going to – I mean, this was earlier in the week when I was doing these, so maybe you've progressively felt worse about this injury as we've gone on here. I thought I was going to have to really fight you here.
No, this one really sucks, though. I really hate this. I think this injury is much more serious than it's being led on by the Dallas front office. And Jerry Jones historically has been one of those people to downplay concerns.
Yes, Jerry does tend to do that. I'm taking the under. I would have taken the under anyway, even if not for the injury. I think this offense is going to be very good, assuming health, of course. But I think the people who say like this could be the best offense in the league, I think they're overselling it a little bit and overselling like how good Dak is, and like their weapons are good, but you know, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, like Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, like, you know, there's other teams that I still think have more elite guys across the board at quarterback and then at receiver. You know, yeah, sure, the Cowboys have maybe more good guys across the board at receiver, but at the end of the day, the elite of the elite are what drive the bus more than having a balanced, good offense, I think, in a lot of cases. Again, in 2019, it's funny, I was going to really hammer this point home if you're fighting me here. In 2019, he barely cracked 4,900. I think that's like his ceiling, that number, which is a good ceiling, a high ceiling. I think he's a very good player. But the team goes 8-8. They head in the week 16. They have a chance to make the playoffs if they beat the Eagles. Dak kind of lays an egg, throws for 265, rushes for 12 yards, no touchdowns on the ground, in the air, or as a team for the Cowboys in that game, as Carson Wentz outplayed him and the Eagles won 17-9. And the next week, he throws for 304 touchdowns against Washington when they have no shot. And that's not to say that, like, you can't trust Dak at all for fantasy. I've got him as a, you know, a top eight guy. But it's just, I think he's a little bit too hit or miss for me to feel great about this number, even if fully healthy. Johnny, what do you think here?
I just think that 48-25 number is like already a high number, because especially like, I think Deshaun Watson led the league. It's a very high number. Yeah,
it's significantly higher than Tom Brady's that we talked about a week or two ago. When if you just made me bet Tom Brady versus Dak straight up passing yards, I'd take Brady.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take the under too, because I just feel like, well, let's say Dak, you just can't not think about his injury. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like he might first three, four games start slow. And everyone's going to ride off Dak thinking, okay, Jerry Jones paid the bag. Now he's going to have to perform. And then after that, I think he'll start to perform. But then I feel like the first four-game gap, he's just going to struggle, maybe have, I think, maybe one 300-yard game, and he's just going to have to play catch-up to even try to hit 48-25. Yeah, so sure. I'm going to take the under.
So, Dalton, I'm assuming the Dak versus Kyler Murray bet that we talked a lot about a month ago, I'm assuming that's off the table at this moment with the injury concerns.
Well, I think we already made it, so I don't really think I get a choice.
Oh, did we already make it?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much a handshake bet in that. I think Dak will outscore him in fantasy. Okay. And if Dak's healthy, I still think that that's a really good bet. So,
all right. Well, moving on. Joe Mixon, obviously we talked about the Bengals and Joe Burrow earlier. Joe Mixon, his over-under, 1,100.5 rushing yards. This was made before I read the Joe Burrow report. I'm still taking the over. I still feel pretty good about this number. He's had two seasons where he's been, you know, fully healthy, as in like he's played, you know, 14, 15 games. And been the starter, and he's topped that number both times. I think as long as he's healthy, even if there are concerns with the O-line, with how Burrow is progressing in the rehab and the mental side of things, I just think this is maybe not a slam dunk, but I feel pretty good about taking the over here. I think we expect that Mixon is going to handle probably more work than he ever has this year. I don't like playing the who else is their game, but when you've got a guy that great as the starter and then like literally nothing behind him, I mean, it's kind of the who else is their argument. I don't like when you're pumping up mediocre guys. I accept that argument in a case like this, though, or like a Saquon Barkley, you know, whatever the case may be. The highest snap share he's ever had is 69%. And you look at guys like Dalvin Cook, obviously Christian McCaffrey's like an alien when it comes to that, when he's playing like Dalvin Cook, like Saquon Barkley, Zeke, like those guys are like 80, 85, 90. I think it's realistic to hope that perhaps Mixon could get to that number. And if he does, you've got talented receivers. You've got Burrow in year two with hopefully a slightly improved offensive line. And hopefully at some point Burrow has a good season. I just think more efficient opportunities, you know, less stacking of the box that he should face. I'm taking the over and running with it here.
Yeah, and I'm taking the over too. I mean, again, this was before I read the report from The Athletic when I wrote about this, but this offense just is going to be, it's going to have to be very good, because they're going to be playing with a very bad defense. They lost their best defensive player, Carl Lawson, to the Jets in free agency. And other than that, it's a bunch of who are they on the defense. They're not going to be able to stop teams. And that all spells good for the offense. And I mean, Joe Mixon is just so good. He's such a good runner. I looked at his years before, and you're right. Every time he plays, you know, close to a full season, he hits that number. And there's no more Giovanni Bernard there to take away the 2 minute drill runs. Mm-hmm. I don't see, the only concern is if he plays a full season with this number, in my mind.
Yep. I agree. Johnny.
Yeah, I just wish this would have been last year without Gio, because we were so high on Joe Mixon to where, like, he got injured, didn't really fully reach his potential or our expectations for. But I love the over on this one. I think, especially Gio not being there, he's going to get such a high snap share.
He should, and he's just plain and simple. He's a better football player than he's been fantasy player so far in his career, and hopefully he can kind of balance. Not that he hasn't been good for fantasy. He's been a top 10 guy, but I think he's like one of the best 6 or 8 running backs probably in the NFL. Justin Jefferson, over or under 1375.5. Coincidentally, Pro Football Focus put out their projections, and they have it at exactly 1375 for his receiving yards. Dalton, I'll start with you. You taking the over or the under here?
I'm taking the over, and this is going to inform some more conversation later on some things I have to say about the Vikings as a whole. But Justin Jefferson hit the over on this last season in one less game and basically not being a starter for the first 3 games of the season. And a full season with Kirk Cousins, Justin Jefferson, I think he's already cemented himself as an elite NFL talent. I do also think that there's going to be some Thielen age model yard regression where he's just not going to be able to do 975 yards like he did last season. He's getting up there in age. There's probably going to be closer load management. A full healthy season from a guy that old gets a little more difficult, especially because he's still good enough that he's going to be getting, you know, very tough matchups week in and week out. And I think Justin Jefferson's just so good that he's going to be the alpha in this offense. And when you're as good as he is, he just drives targets his way because he's open so often.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking the under, and I love Jefferson, so I hate to do this. And it was a really tough call for me. This was probably the toughest one of this week. But I feel like that number, I know he hit 1,400, and he could do better than that in his career. But just in his situation, you know, with Cook at running back, who he's got at quarterback, I think that number is not leaving him hardly any room for error. And so I'm just going with, I think, the percentage play in my mind and taking the under, because I can see different scenarios where this could not go his way. And, you know, Thielen could easily have his touchdowns cut in half, but have a slightly better yardage season this year. Even if he has fallen off a little bit, I mean, he was under 1,000 yards last year. He could have a little bit of a better season. Irv Smith, he's a year 3 guy who could be a breakout kind of guy this season. He, not that he's going to have like a huge year, but he could be more productive than what they had at tight end last season between him and Rudolph. And I guess Conklin was maybe there at that point. I can't really remember. Jefferson, when you look at his game log, it's like he had a handful of games that he was below 50 yards, and he had like a handful of games where he was like 130, 150. He had a game of 175. He just had some huge blow up games. So it's like, you just worry like maybe one less of those, not that like he's a guy that's going to have blow up games, 'cause he's just that good, but that just scares me also. And then, you mentioned Kirk Cousins, getting Kirk Cousins this season all year. Are we sure about that? Have we seen Kirk Cousins talking lately? Not to get into the whole vaccine thing too much here, but Mike Zimmer is not happy with what's going on there. The Vikings have very low vaccination numbers. The whole quarterback room was in quarantine for a while. I think a lot of them had COVID or were close contact. Does not seem like Cousins plans on getting the vaccine. And with a guy where we know for sure he's gone out and said he's probably, you know, we know he doesn't have it. It's like, I think that's at least got to factor into my weighing the risk of this number here.
Yeah, that's probably a good point that I didn't fully consider. I'm going to just go ahead.
It's not something you want to consider. I don't want to consider it. I don't even want to think about it. But it's at least in my head. It's not affecting my rank, but my rank of where I would take him and hitting this very specific number are very different things.
Yeah. Well, Case Cookus is a great backup quarterback, and he was throwing great passes. No, I will say, if this doesn't get Kirk Cousins to go get vaccinated, I'll be very confused as to what will, because quite literally the man is not playing football the job he's paid to do because he did not get vaccinated. Because I don't think he had COVID. I think he was a close contact, which under the NFLPA rules is a 10-day absence of practice and quarantine if you're not vaccinated. If he was vaccinated, it's 2 days. Well, so he'd be back on the field right away.
He was talking about like how he could get like plexiglass to that. I don't think it's happening, man. Anyway, Johnny, over or under on this number here, 1375.5.
I'm going to go with the under. I just feel like even though he had a great rookie season, I feel like it's going to be very hard to follow up on that again. And I just think it's just going to be a kind of a coin toss. I think it'll probably go to like the last game. It's probably going to decide it or not, but mm-hmm. I'll take the under.
Mm-hmm. I am with you. I think it's going to be cutting it pretty close. Another talented rookie here from last year in CD Lamb. So his number 1,050.5. Again, complicated by the Dak Prescott thing, but I'm still taking the over here. I have to be fair. If I'm going to say that Dak's numbers through 5 weeks were funny money, I can't just run with what Lamb was doing in the first 5 weeks. But I do want to point out he was on pace for 1,400 yards through the first five games. Not that I'm saying he's going to do that this year, but you look at what he did last season just on the whole. He had 935 yards, and that was with a very good start, a very great start. And then after Dak got hurt, weeks 7 through 11, it was like an abomination for that whole offense and for Lamb specifically. Had one game where he played, got five targets. It was that Washington game where the Cowboys had like maybe 3 points, or Washington beat him by like 30 points in Washington. He had 0 yards, he had five targets, 0 yards. He only topped 40 yards one time in that week 7 to 11 stretch. Weeks 12 through 17, he was okay. He was fine, but not the kind of guy that he can be and that I think he showed, just not even from a numbers perspective, but just from a talent perspective, that I think he can be early on last season. I'm in on Gallup. I've said that. I'm in on putting Gallup closer to those top two guys than maybe some others have. But I'm still very high on Lamb. Maybe not quite as high as people are getting now. I looked back at an old note that I had from a month ago where I liked Lamb, and Lamb is in the 25 to 30 range. Like he's a great value for me. He is not there anymore. But if we're talking this number specifically, I like the over here for Lamb.
Yeah, Lamb sneaking into the second round, which his separation between him and Amari Cooper, I've probably talked about this way too much. It's getting really tiresome. Amari Cooper is an amazing NFL receiver as well, and he's on the PUP like everybody expected. But whatever, I am taking the over on this as well. You know, last season, CD had 935 yards, didn't have an offseason, and played with some of the worst quarterbacking in the NFL, from Andy Dalton to DiNucci to Gilbert. Even an injury-hampered Dak is better than those three guys combined. It's not going to be very hard for CD to hit that. I still think this offense is going to be playing from behind a lot because the defense just profiles to be bad, and that means more yards for everybody around. And, I mean, CeeDee Lamb is just a baller, and if the reports from camp are true and he's going to be getting some outside looks too, it's a lot easier for him to hit that yardage total than having to get the dink and dunks down the field. And if he has a quarterback who can hit him down the field like Dak, there's just so much more upside there. So this is a pretty easy over for me as well.
Hey, and if I were writing an article where I grabbed the five best highlights I've seen on Twitter from camp, he might have two of them. Like he's had some great highlights in training camp so far this year. Johnny, I see you reacting there. Are you in on Lamb this year as well?
100% on the over, because like you said, he's just had just incredible catches where you're just like, I can't wait for him to do this in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I love the over on this. So I just think he's just gonna ball out this year. Hopefully everyone stays healthy, and I think he probably hit like 1,200 if he wants to be fancy with it.
Okay, well I hope he wants to be fancy with it. And Johnny, I'm gonna let you start with this one before I turn Dalton and I loose on one another here. Miles Gaskin, over under, is 800.5 rushing yards. Johnny, what say you here? You're definitely going to be a tiebreaker, so.
Yep, we'll see. I like the over on Miles Gaskin.
Okay. Tell me why you're wrong.
Nope. That's all you get.
Dalton, do you want to go first? Do you want me to make my case first?
I can make my case first because this, the Dak thing probably would have been spicy had it not been for the injury. This is probably really spicy. Let me first say, I did a lot of research into this one, and
we still need to get to sleepers and breakouts.
I know. I do want to say this. I think the Dolphins as a whole are being underrated as a unit in fantasy football. They don't have a single player in the top 50, and I think that's a mistake.
They also don't have like hardly a single first string weapon healthy at the moment. So yeah, that would be part of it.
But whether it's Fuller or Waddle, I think those guys deserve some more recognition. But I have the over of 800.5 rushing yards. So the first thing I want to say is last season, in the 10 games that Gaskin was healthy, he had 142 touches for 584 yards. You give him a 200 rush pace, which isn't a crazy amount of rushes for a running back. He hits the number by 20. He gets a whole other game this season. So I'm not too concerned about him hitting it. But at the same time, there are some pretty uninspiring guys who hit this number last year.
Oh, yeah.
Kenyon Drake, Ronald Jones, and Miles Sanders. I mean,
although to be fair, Ronald, all those guys are better than Miles Gaskin.
We'll see about that. and I did some research on the new play caller, Godfrey, in Miami. In his one season as the Houston Texans offensive coordinator, the offense led the NFL in plays per game. They were second in rushing plays and 10th in passing plays. Last season, Miami was 22nd in rushing plays and 23rd in passing plays. So I'm not going to profile the Dolphins to lead the league in rushing attempts or passing attempts, but I think they're going to be within the top 16 this year. And more plays just mean more opportunity.
Yeah, it helps for sure.
So I definitely think those. And then I just want to dispel a myth that's been pronounced on this pod, which is that Miles Gaskin and Salvin Ahmed never played together. Because week 16 and 17, they did play together. And Miles Gaskin's snap share was 76% and 61% in those two games. In week 16 against the Raiders, Salvin Ahmed actually got the start after running for 122 yards the week before against the Patriots. And he was quickly outplayed by Gaskin, who in that week had 150 total yards and two touchdowns. So I think he's just a better back in general.
We'll see. I actually need to go and look and make sure he played after what you tried to pull with.
Yeah, I went through game logs, but I feel free for you to look at it. They have played together, which definitely changed my informed decision-making on this entirely. And Ahmed's not practicing right now. He's in a non-contact jersey.
Yeah, no. I think he actually is injured right now.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Good call, Evan, to double check on Dalton's stats because he likes to just kind of throw things out there.
Go look at the Raiders game log. The first rush of the game is Salvin Ahmed. He gets
I'm not gonna go look at the play by play. That's gonna take me too much time. Johnny, you can feel free to do that if you'd like. Did Gaskin play those last two games though?
Yeah, the Raiders week is the week he had like 150 total yards, two touchdowns against the Raiders.
Okay, so they may have played the last two games of the season. One of those games didn't go so well, if I remember right, so neither here nor there. I'm taking the under here. If I were making a list of running backs most likely to lose their jobs or to not get the workload that we are projecting for them, Gaskin, I don't know if he'd be one, but he'd be like top three for sure. 100% he'd be top three. I have him ranked the highest. I have him ranked the highest by quite a bit, but I don't, out of that backfield, to be clear, I don't feel great about anointing him as that far and away the top guy in the backfield. I think he's just a guy. I think everyone in that backfield is a Jag, just a guy. I think Ahmed last year when he played was pretty, you know, he was 80 to 90% as good as Gaskin. And I think could have similar production and maybe cut into his snaps a little bit. And then you've got Malcolm Brown was an absolute pain in the butt for Daryl Henderson last season when Henderson was kind of the guy when Akers was out. And they've already said that Brown's going to pretty much be the third down guy. And I think he's going to eat into the Gaskin workload a lot more than people would like to admit. I don't think it's going to be like Jordan Howard pre-release last year where he has like six carries, 12 yards, one touchdown. I think Malcolm Brown is better than that at this point in his career. And at least he was last year. We'll see what he looks like this year. And then you have the whole, well, the Broncos had the trade in front of the Dolphins to get Javonte Williams because the Dolphins wanted to draft him. I think the Dolphins proved obviously they're okay coming into the season with Gaskin as their starting running back. But do they see him as the guy sticking around for the long term? I'm not so sure. I just think there's a lot of risk factor in him just straight up losing the starting job, whether it's they sign somebody, whether it's, you know, Malcolm Brown is just like the guy that they end up trusting more than Gaskin. I mean, he could be like two mistakes away from kind of being in the doghouse where other guys, I just don't think that risk factor – is quite there. So I'm on the under. This is where I for sure thought that there was going to be a bet come about here. So where do you have Gaskin ranked at this point in time?
Let me get my RB ranks pulled up really quickly.
So I've got Gaskin at 27. So we can either do him versus another player, or we can do a top whatever finish. Either way.
Well, I would bet he's a top 24 running back, no problem. I think I have him 15, 16.
15, wow. Yeah. Well, if you have him, if you have, okay, I'll wait for you to find your rankings, but we'll split the difference of wherever you have him ranked.
So I have him RB 17, the first running back in tier 4, right underneath Najee Harris and right above J.K. Dobbins.
Okay, so RB 22. So I say that he is not a top 22 running back. Dalton says that he is a top 22 running back, which obviously, if he's 22, Dalton still gets that win. So, all right, I feel pretty good about that one.
Wait, Dalton, what were you saying about the first rush of like the Raiders game?
Salvin Ahmed had the first rush of the Raiders game.
What was your point behind that, though?
Evan has said before in the podcast that Salvin Ahmed and Myles Gaskin never played together, and they've played together. They've shared the backfield.
Okay. Okay. We may go to the next topic.
All right. We can get into the sleepers and breakouts here. Dalton, I will let you start. Obviously, if for anyone who doesn't, you know the terminology here, a sleeper, we're going with guys more like in the, I'll say like round 6 to just beyond, I guess. It can go as deep as you want. I went pretty deep with my second guy. And then breakouts, we're looking basically at I was looking at non-first round guys who could finish top 12 in their position, I felt. Not necessarily predicting it with those guys, but guys that I, you know, if you're going to make me name two sleepers and two breakouts, these are the guys that I think could outproduce what we are thinking about them right now. Who do you have first as your first sleeper?
So my first sleeper, and this one probably doesn't come as much as a surprise to anybody who's listened, is Jamal Williams. I think Jamal Williams has an outside shot as finishing of a top 24 season, but definitely a top 36 season is something well within his range of outcomes. Right now, he's RB 45 off the boards and is 126th overall. Big surprise to nobody. I don't think DeAndre Swift is going to hold the starting job in Detroit just based off of what the coaches are saying and the tendencies. And, you know, Jamal Williams had a better season than DeAndre Swift did last year. And this isn't by a pure volume perspective. They had almost identical carries. But in those carries, Jamal Williams had higher yards after contact. He had a lower stuff rate, which means when he was mitt in the pocket by per PFF, he was less likely to go down. And Anthony Lynn and the coaching staff brought Jamal Williams in with the new front office, and they have just talked him up all offseason while DeAndre Swift has slightly been on the back burner. So I think that there's potential for him to finish, you know, within the top 36 backs with DeAndre Swift there. But if DeAndre Swift goes down, Jamal Williams really quickly looks like a value that, despite all of the misgivings in Detroit, they have the 10th ranked offensive line. They have Penei Sewell. They had a pretty good line last year anyways. Jared Goff is a better quarterback behind an offensive line like that. And Anthony Lynn has already described Jamal Williams as the goal line back. And that really tanks DeAndre Swift's value, who made up a lot of the points missed in yards last season with 8 total touchdowns on a very limited measure. Now, that's a lot of kind of going off of what we have based off coach speak, but running back is one of those positions that is really highly variable. And Jamal Williams is a good enough back that he was stealing work away from Aaron Jones, who I'm okay with saying is more talented than DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say he's a good enough back. I would just say that coaches like love him for some reason and like really trust him. I don't really have never really understood it. I wonder, do you think that there is a path to him, to Jamal Williams being a starter, to being like a starting caliber, like a flex fantasy play, even if DeAndre Swift is still there every game?
Yes, I would feel more comfortable starting Jamal Williams every week than DeAndre Swift at this point.
What? Okay, that's ridiculous. Where do you have him ranked? Where do you have both those two ranked?
I mean, I have DeAndre Swift ranked vastly higher.
Well, okay. Well, then so what?
But like,
let me rephrase.
A lot of problems there.
Based on where I'm spending my draft capital, I feel vastly more comfortable with the lineup I create with Jamal Williams than I do with DeAndre Swift. I think that DeAndre Swift.
So basically, you're just saying you feel better about him at his ADP than you do Swift at his ADP.
Yes. I have DeAndre Swift as my RB20, and I have Jamal Williams as my RB33, right above Kenyon Drake.
Let me look around. I think you have him a fair bit higher. I have Jamal Williams as my RB49. I am not buying the hype.
You were below market on him then.
Yeah, it's just like I kind of see him the same way I see Connor. He has more he will catch more passes on a week-to-week basis, but I think Connor's going to get more rushing work. So, and obviously, I like DeAndre Swift a lot more than Chase Edmonds, so there is that factor too. I think even though I had Swift as a guy I was afraid I was wrong about, I think I still feel I still bake in more upside for Swift than you do. And that's probably the main place of difference between us on Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I really see Swift getting relegated to like an Eckler with Melvin Gordon role. The way that Lynn has talked about him, the way that the coaching staff views him, I really don't think that he's going to be getting. I think this is close to a 50-50 snap share for most of the season.
I mean, I don't think I think that Williams will play and play a lot because it's kind of like Aaron Jones where you just don't want him to play 75% of the snaps, but I don't think it's going to be that close as far as usage and production between those two. And if the coaches are convincing people of that, I say keep talking, coaches, keep driving that price down. I'll take DeAndre Swift in the fifth round if that's where people want it, fourth round.
Well, I think he's still there. Going in the third round right
now. Well, we'll see. Give Anthony Lynn two more weeks, and he might have you and other people reconsidering.
And I'm okay with that. I really think Lynn means it when he says it. I don't think that Swift's going to be a good value where he's at.
So my first sleeper, as I was writing these notes, with Don't Stop Believing playing on my speakers, a single tear streaming down my cheek.
Is this Devin Singletary?
Full of belief in my heart, Devin Singletary is my first sleeper. Is it possible that Zach Moss actually is not going to be the starter or like the 60 to the 40? Could it be more 50-50? Could Singletary eventually be the 60 to the 40? I don't know, but I just know that Singletary is being drafted like he's already like completely lost that job. And Moss is being drafted like he's won the job. And I'm just not sure. I read what Singletary, what Moss, what the coaches, what everyone's saying. And there's really no commitment to either guy right now as the starter. It's going to be a committee. I'm definitely not pumping Singletary up like I did last year. No doubt that was definitely wrong. But Singletary is a guy you could take in the 11th or 12th round. And you could get the 60%. Or even the 50%, 55% in that backfield, which I know it's going to be a lower volume backfield, probably like it was last year. But we talked about a little bit a couple weeks ago. If they can at least be more efficient, if the offensive line can block a little better for them, they're not going to be high touchdown guys with Josh Allen in the red zone. But I just think there is definite value to be had in the 11th or 12th round, getting a guy that, like you feel with Jamal Williams, I think Singletary can be a flex. This season, they can probably both be flexes this season, but Singletary is the one who is going much later in drafts. And I don't know. You also have the variable that Moss is coming off the ankle surgery very late in the season. And I think it seems like he's like pretty much fully fine and practicing, but Singletary at least does not have the health concern from last year, like Moss. So just another point, not in his favor, but just to, I feel pretty good about taking him in the 11th or 12th round. I'll put it that way.
I hate both the Buffalo Bills backs, just full disclosure. I mean, this team just passes so much that there's hard to find really good value in it.
But if you get an RB3 in the 11th round, weirdly enough, Pro Football Focus actually picked him to be the starter. I don't know if you saw that. They projected him the starter, which I was a little surprised by.
Well, and weirdly enough, unplanned, Devin Singletary goes 108 and Jamal Williams goes just a little later.
I'll take that bet. It's a very, very boring and unsightly bet that nobody but us will care about.
Yeah,
we've had worse bets, to be clear, but we can go Singletary versus Jamal Williams.
We have Evan Ingram against Higbee last season. Well, was a real barn burner.
I was thinking Paul Perkins versus Jeff Janis. That was pre-podcast. That was probably the worst of the worst. But
I would take that one. Right. I think Jamal Williams has a better ceiling than Devin Singletary, whatever that means when you're that deep in a draft. But, I mean, either of these guys, whoever takes over the backfield, in my opinion, it's just – it could be – so boring to watch them.
Sure.
And you know, they're the way they run this offense in the red zone, these guys are basically between the 20s because the running back is useless in the red zone
for sure. And I, like I said, with the breakouts, I went a little more high profile. The sleepers, I tried to go deep, and believe it or not, this is my shallow sleeper of the two. My next guy, it's kind of me cheating a little bit. I'll go ahead and go here. I have Larry Roundtree down, but I also have or Joshua Kelly, whoever, because we've got a little time to see who kind of wins that RB2 job. Maybe we won't have clarity by the time drafts roll around, but there's still preseason games. There's more camp to be played. I think there's value to be had. I mean, can we agree that there's value to be had in that Chargers backfield as the RB2? Because they've already come out and said it's going to be one of those two guys, or maybe it'll be both, as kind of the goal line guy.
I will agree there's value to be had. Yes.
And we're we're talking sleepers.
So we're talking super, yes.
Roundtree, you're not drafting. Kelly, you're probably not drafting, or maybe he's like your last or second to last pick. And it's a guy that you stash, you wait, and maybe he can be, maybe he's a running back fill-in, which is very valuable if you have a running back you can put in and maybe get 10 points out of in any given week.
Well, and potential bye guy, Austin Eckler, someone I've done a lot of research into, has been a starting running back for 21 games total in his career, and he's never put together, when considered the starting back, a fully healthy season. He's, in fact, never played more than 4 games back-to-back when listed as a starter. Mm-hmm. But
did the year that he had the crazy year, was Gordon, like, listed as the starter? Did that, like, throw off that?
Yeah, it did.
A little bit?
It did, but... I mean, he's a guy who's never seen a higher than like a 65% workload.
Well, the main thing with Eckler when it comes to this argument specifically from me is, I think, you know, with the workload, like you were going to say, I think there are going to be at least 8 to 12 carries a game that are up for grabs in that backfield outside of Eckler. Because even if he touches the ball 16 times a game, it's going to be 6 receptions, 10 carries probably, or even maybe more so than that. And then Eckler has never had a season with, I thought I had it down here, but I guess I don't. He's never had more than like 4 rushing touchdowns in a season. So there's just all that goal line work is just there for one of those guys if they can go grab it.
Well, and again, this is probably getting to what I was going to talk about on my guys. In games listed as the RB1 where he was the starter, Eckler averages 10.86 carries a game. And then he averages 6 receptions a game.
Wow, I was like right on that.
Yeah, you were right on it. So, yes, there is value. And again, this is Joe Lombardi, who comes from the Saints as offensive coordinator. And the Saints used Alvin Kamara in a restricted role. I mean, he didn't play 80% of the snaps. And Latavius Murray or Mark Ingram previously always had standalone value in fantasy formats.
And then last year, weeks 13 through 17, Kalen Ballage, Austin Eckler, both active, both played all those games. Eckler was the RB13, so, you know, very good. He was playing well in that stretch when he came back. Only had double-digit carries one time in that stretch. Kalen Ballage, RB44, so, like, not great, but, like, usable. And for a running back that is literally not being drafted, if you can get that kind of production and he can be a plug-and-play guy, I just think that's valuable. And I'm kind of calling my shot with Roundtree a little bit here just because it's a new regime. He was the draft pick. He had a great career at Missouri, 4,000 yards, 40 touchdowns, late round pick. He's kind of like John Gruden would call him a grinder. He's like a power guy, not very elusive, kind of a perfect goal line, short yardage, does the dirty work, compliment to Eckler. Kelly was in and out of the doghouse all season last year, was very, very bad. Lots of fumbles. And then you've got Justin Jackson, who I think is on the COVID list, was already kind of on like my radar, like he could be cut. And now he just hasn't been participating. So I kind of like taking the late shot on Roundtree, or just monitoring him in the free agent pool.
Yeah, I think Justin Jackson does get cut for what it's worth. And I think I watched enough of Joshua Kelly last season to know he's not good. My bet would be Roundtree, and I'd watch. It's going to be one of those things where if you're a savvy fantasy owner and you see week one, Roundtree has like a 30% snap share as a rookie, you probably pick him up and hold.
Yep, and you can probably get him before he's like on the waiver wire radar if that does happen. Week one, Dalton, who is your second sleeper?
Wait, hold on. So your sleeper is Roundtree or the yes. Chargers RB2? Okay.
It's Roundtree. I said at the beginning I was cheating and saying whoever wins that job, but I'm kind of calling my shot with Roundtree here. I think it's going to be him.
My next one, you're going to love this one, Evan, is Irv Smith Jr.
Yes. I was going to have him on this list, but he's on my guys, so I'm saving him. But go ahead.
Oh, great. So we can talk about him twice. Let me first say we haven't talked about the tight end position at all on this podcast because it's incredibly boring. But Irv Smith is one of those guys where he's basically he's not being drafted. He's tight end 14. So he's going very late in drafts. 148 is his overall ADP. So this is like 14th round territory. Mm-hmm. And the tight end role is inarguably the hardest role for somebody to pick up in the NFL. We've seen it year over year. That's why there's still apprehension about like Kyle Pitts being a generational talent the first day he steps on the field. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to learn. But to give you an idea, Irv Smith turns 24 in like 6 days on August 9th. TJ Hawkinson.
Is that actually true? I thought he was even younger than that. You keep going.
TJ Hawkinson. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He turns 23 on the 9th.
Yeah.
TJ Hawkinson,
he's very young,
who has the same number of years in the NFL, is going to be 25 this NFL season. Mm-hmm. Irv Smith is incredibly young. He's an athletic freak. And I know Mike Zimmer has come out and said some things like, well, we still want to get Conklin involved. Conklin's a fine tight end.
You know, the thing about Mike Zimmer is as soon as he starts talking crap about you, that means he actually like notices you and you're going to be good. Like that's actually like for real. Like he's like that classic football coach. Like, oh, I'm going to kind of motivate my guys. Got to make him go out there and really earn it.
And like I said earlier, I think there's going to be at least a steady decline in what we're seeing from Thielen. And part of that's going to come out in the red zone. And the Vikings are really, really good at creating red zone plays and getting the guys they want the ball in those red zone plays. Mm-hmm. And Irv Smith has one of the highest verticals of any tight end to come out of the draft. He was an absolute freak in Alabama for the year he played there. And Kirk Cousins, for all of the bad things and his ineffectiveness at staying healthy when it comes to COVID, is a really accurate quarterback, and he can hit this guy. And when you're looking at the offense, I mean, Justin Jefferson, Dalvin Cook, and Thielen, and then the offense gets really thin really quick, and they need a new playmaker. And Irv Smith, he just really profiles as that tight end who could finish in the top eight pretty quickly on some touchdown margin.
Yep. If you're taking a shot on tight end, I love the young, talented guys who have been, you know, kind of the Noah Fant was kind of my guy last year, a little bit more highly ranked than Irv Smith. I'm not going to say too much on Irv here, because like I said, he's going to be my guy. I'll have more on him at that point. What I will say is I think Irv Smith, not Adam Thielen, is going to be Kirk Cousins' blanket, his security blanket. And if you're in a Kirk Cousins offense, that's kind of where you want to be. Unless you're the stud, you want to be the security blanket, because that's where he's going to be looking a lot.
I agree. Yeah, I think he'll be pretty amazing, and he's a good shot compared to some of these guys like Evan Engram, who you know what they are. Breakouts, Evan, who's your first breakout?
So my first guy, I told you earlier this week when I was putting this list together that I like this guy already, but I went from liking him to like completely talking myself into him. Might bump him up in my ranks pretty significantly. Pretty upset that he's on a team that I will not be able to trade for in our dynasty league. And that's Brandon Ayuk. I love Brandon Ayuk coming into this season. I really wasn't expecting to love him, but I just think the quarterback uncertainty coupled with, he and Debo were the same guy last year. And then you've got George Kittle. So he's got the George Kittle problem. I think that's the only reason that you're getting him at wide receiver 25 in drafts right now, because I think Ayuk showed himself to be the better pure receiver than Debo. He's not like a great, great, great pure receiver yet. He didn't really do that much that last year because the Niners don't really do that much more than just a couple step drop and pass. But I think he's a better pure receiver, and he can also do like all of the short yard yak stuff that Debo can. I just think he's the better player of those two. He also missed 6 games last year, injuries and COVID. And just if that doesn't happen, if you just extrapolate his 10 games over a 16-game stretch, we'll just put it this way. On a points-per-game basis last year, with what was going on at quarterback and everything burning around him, and he's a rookie with no camp and he has the injuries, he's the wide receiver 16 in points per game last year, ahead of guys like Amari Cooper, Terry McLaurin, Chris Godwin, CeeDee Lamb, and that's points per game. So that's not including games those other guys missed either. DJ Moore is another one. I don't think he's going to go ahead of any of those guys in drafts. And he's a double-digit guy in 8 of 12 games, double-digit points last year. And that's on a 23% target share. So it's not like it was, oh, everyone's hurt, he's getting a 35% target share, like this isn't sustainable. Like, I think a 23% target share is very sustainable, and he could very well even surpass that this year. You know, 14 red zone targets, 5 touchdowns. Like, nothing that he did last year strikes me as unsustainable for this year. No unsustainable production rates. I just think he's going to keep getting better and better this year. I think he has top 10 receiver type of upside.
I agree. I have him ranked right under Odell at 21. So I'm 5 spots above where he's at on the market. I think you're, from the sounds of it, you're a little more bullish on him than I am. I will say, and I've said this about Debo Samuel before, I pretty much treat him like a running back when factoring in injuries. I think he's going to get injured. Yeah. It just happens. And I mean, Ayuk is just he's such a Kyle Shanahan weapon. This was talked about when he was drafted last year, because he's a yards after the catch guy. The Shanahan offense isn't like this weird deep post route. Mm-hmm. It's this creating space in the middle of the field and down the side of the field. And he fits really well into that. And I think he also benefits incredibly when Trey Lance starts, which really from camp reports sounds like it's going to be much, much sooner than later.
We'll see. We'll see. I hope so, but we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, to me, this feels like a Matt Flynn situation where you just signed a guy and you love him, but the quarterback behind him is just so much better when Russell Wilson took over from Matt Flynn. And I think that Brandon Ayuk as a dynasty buy is, just to relate to the beginning of your conversation, is incredibly valuable, because he's going to be the guy that is with a great quarterback in Trey Lance for a while, and they're going just to develop really good rapport. And you want guys who can create their separation like he can, and can create their own yards. So yeah, I agree.
And just if he would have played more games last year, he would not be where he is in dynasty or in redraft right now. I just don't think. I think he'd be more in the top 20 conversation for sure. But Dalton, who's your first breakout guy here?
Okay, so let me just say, on these breakouts, it was like a head scratcher when I really jumped into ADP and I was like, are you kidding me? So I talked about him last year. I'll talk about him this year. I'll talk about him the year following. It's Tyler Lockett. It's Mr. Just Disrespected. Let me first say, I know what every single argument about Tyler Lockett being bad is, and it's Dalton. He had 50 points in a game, and that's why he was a top 24 wide receiver. I understand that.
You didn't do the fantasy footballer, the voice of public opinion.
I did not do the voice of public opinion. But first of all, this guy's going close to the end of the 5th round, early 6th on Fantasy Pros ADP. You try finding a player there that's going to get 50 points in a game ever. I mean, that wins you a week. It does. And then this game, Tyler Lockett had his 50-point game. The Seahawks played one more game. And then week 11 happened, and the entire Seahawks offense fell out of just – they fell down to earth entirely. After week 9, this is the QB – this is how these players would have finished on a per-game total.
Oh, God, I don't even want to know.
Russell Wilson would have been QB 20. DK Metcalf would have been wide receiver 22. Tyler Lockett would have been wide receiver 37. And Chris Carson would have been running back 21. That is abysmal. It's absolutely horrible. That is not in the remote range of outcomes for this team, in my opinion. And I mean, we talked about it on our NFC preview.
Yep.
I really, really like Shane Waldron. I really think the Seahawks are being undervalued.
The offensive coordinator, to be clear.
Yes, Shane Waldron is the new OC. And we know Pete Carroll lets the offensive coordinators run the game. That's why he's fired so many of them. and Shane Waldron wants to run a horizontal attack. Now, I'm not here to say DK Metcalf is not going to be a top 12 wide receiver, because he is. Mm-hmm. But if you're running a horizontal attack, that is Tyler Lockett's name and game. And it's just...
And more importantly, with that should come more consistency. Again, we talked about all this stuff when we talked about the Seahawks a couple of weeks back. More consistency for all of those guys, not just Lockett, but for all those guys. But Lockett will obviously be the a benefactor as well. And just I think teams figured them out and what they wanted to do. And what they wanted to do was hold the ball, try and get the ball to their playmakers down the field. And teams just said, nope, we're not going to let you do that. And the Seahawks were like, okay, well, we don't know what to do now. That was that and running the ball. That's all we can do. That will not be the case this year. I do not believe. I like that DK Metcalf confirmed my priors to steal your term and came out and said that that's basically what they've been doing in training camp. And I'm in, I'm ready for it this year.
Yeah, wait until DK Metcalf starts running more than two routes, too. The NFL is in big trouble. But this, I mean, these two can both finish as top 12 wide receivers again, and the gap between them is just too significant, in my opinion.
I agree. So my second guy, you know, I don't know if you found that. I don't know who your second guy is. Do you have a running back or do you have a receiver as your second guy?
The middle running backs are just so bad.
That's my thing. It's like I tried really hard to find a running back for this list, and, you know, I would have done Irv for one of these, but he's going to be my guy. It's like, I can't find a running back in the dead zone. It's the dead zone for a reason. I can't find a guy who I really believe is a, you know, you have like CEH, but that I was trying to go not quite that high. I mean, this guy's not too much lower, but it's just so hard to find a running back who you think is a guy with top 12 potential past those top guys. I've got DJ Moore as my guy here. Underdog ADP is 41st overall, so wide receiver 20. I guess that would put him what, like in the fourth round, mid fourth. So this is from Chris Harris of Harris Football, actually just today. So perfect timing on his part here. Of 32 receivers who have passed 200 receptions in their first 3 years, only DJ Moore, and this is since like 2000 or 2001, only DJ Moore has failed to surpass 10 touchdowns in the last 20 years. So then Harris decided, okay, I'm going to look and see if there are other guys who have had like 200 receptions in their first three seasons and see if we can find some low touchdown rates. I guess also in that stretch, 19 red zone targets for DJ Moore in 3 years, 10 total touchdowns. Like that's just abysmal how low that is. 4, 4, and 2 are his touchdown totals. 2, 4, 4 is the order it goes in. So since 2001, here are the receivers with 200 receptions in their first three seasons and the low touchdowns. Devon Bess, don't know who that is. Andre Johnson, and this was a thing for Andre Johnson that he was like a low touchdown guy early in his career. Later in his career, he was more in the at least the higher single digits. Kendall Wright, not a shining star by any means. Jarvis Landry, who is like a pure slot guy. DJ Moore is an outside guy. Brandon Marshall, which I was like shocked by that. And then Stephon Diggs. So I think it's more of a fluke than a disqualifier. Like the low touchdown stuff for DJ Moore. I'm not
Julio's
like
not on that list.
Amazing. Well, first three seasons. This is only okay. Julio may have had 3 year stretch there in the middle where he was in rare company because he had a year with no touchdowns till week 11, where I happen to have him on my team. I'm not saying that Moore's gonna like go crazy and have a ton of touchdowns, that he's gonna like regress and that, you know, back to the mean and have like a huge touchdown season. But if you just give him 8 touchdowns in any season, he goes from top 20. Well, I have it right here. Last year, if you give him 8 touchdowns, he goes up to wide receiver 13 on the season last year. And that's a lot different than the wide receiver 23 that he finished at. And I just, there's like nothing about DJ Moore that says like this guy can't catch touchdowns. Like there's nothing in his game where you just don't think that he can do that. He's a really good player. I think he had his best season even last year, just only 4 touchdowns. He's never been a high touchdown guy, not even in college. He was 6 and 8 in his two like full seasons as a starter. But you know, if he can just get to 8 touchdowns in the NFL season, his last 2 years, he's been around 120 targets, 1,200 yards. He took big steps in the vertical passing game last year. That's with Teddy Bridgewater as his quarterback here. He's basically the modern-day worst version of Alex Smith as far as decision-making and willingness to take chances down the field. Even with that, DJ Moore, his air yard share, which means the percentage of total team target distance, was 41.6%. That's wide receiver 2 in the entire NFL. He's got big play upside, which even that alone should theoretically give him a shot to pop a couple more big play touchdowns. He's got the upside that I think we could be talking about him as a top 12 wide receiver in next year's draft if he can pop this year, like I think he can.
So it's funny you put him. I almost put Robbie Anderson as my breakout here.
I like Anderson too.
And I decided not to because I'm very scared about Sam Darnold not being good. I'm unsure.
The counter, at least for Moore, but even Anderson too, is like in Carolina specifically with Moore, it's not like he's been playing with a bunch of world beaters like by any means. So even if Darnold's bad, it's like, well, it's just kind of par for the course for those guys there.
Well, and under Gase, I mean, Darnold was as good as Teddy already was. So you'd think he would improve just based off of the history. But my concern and the reason why I didn't put Robbie Anderson here, same concern I would share with DJ Moore, is that they really specialize the routes these guys ran. I looked at the reception perception, and Robbie Anderson basically turned into like a slant slot guy in intermediate routes, and then DJ Moore turned into their deep threat, and they just didn't run them any differently. They didn't move them around the field, and that ended up being why I didn't rank Robbie Anderson as my breakout, is because he's just not running a full route tree. And that would be my only hedge against DJ Moore is he's doing good routes and Sam Darnold has a much better arm than Teddy Bridgewater. But it just sucks when he's only running, you know, the flies and the deep routes, and the deep goes instead of anything intermediate and vice versa.
You wonder Robbie. Maybe with Terrace Marshall in the picture now, because like I like Robbie Anderson, but Robbie Anderson is kind of like the definition of a guy who he's good at what he does and he's not good at what. You know, he's not good at the other stuff, right? Like he's a good player in his role, but he's very limited in a lot of aspects as a receiver. Maybe with Terrace Marshall there, because I think DJ Moore could do everything. So maybe you get another guy there who has impressed by all counts so far. We'll see how he does this year. Maybe that'll help them be able to move more around. Maybe if they had McCaffrey all last season, maybe that's different too. Kind of hard to say, but yeah, I'm with you. I saw that, and it is a concern, but I think at the end of the day, I'm just betting on the player and DJ Moore. I think he's just a really good player.
And he is a good player. I do agree with that. Mm-hmm. Just, it's so scary betting on Sam Darnold, next guy, speaking of quarterbacks you're scared your receiver is tied to, this is the same vein as Tyler Lockett. It's like, why is this guy going here? It's Deontay Johnson.
Ooh, I thought for sure this was going to be a Terry McLaurin because he really hasn't like had like the top 12 breakout yet.
So Terry was too high he was like almost 30 in ADP. And I was like, ah, that's a little too high. Mm-hmm. Deontay Johnson right now is ADP is wide receiver 23 and he's 58th overall. Okay, let me just say he had 150 targets last season, didn't play 2 games, left 1 game early, and got benched in the Bills game because he was dropping so many balls. Mm-hmm. So in a, let's not say a 12-game span, he had 150 targets, but in probably 13-ish games, he had 150. And his role in this offense is the only one that I can say without a doubt is unchallenged. James Washington and Chase Claypool kind of ran similar routes, and Claypool's the better player, but James Washington seems to be like Mike Tomlin's favorite receiver to put out there that no one wants to see. And Juju, I think he's going to be challenged for his short A-dot role with Najee Harris coming into that offense. And it's really only Deontay Johnson is being the undisputed alpha that I think is where Big Ben's going to go. Big Ben has a history of feeding one guy all the targets and kind of having ancillary guys around him. And I mean, Big Ben is just declining. And I am a big proponent that I think talent drives targets and you don't get this kind of target volume unless a veteran quarterback thinks you're a good player, which Deontay Johnson is.
Well, and Deontay, I'm glad you mentioned Big Ben declining because of that fact, what Big Ben needs is someone who can, boom, get open. That is exactly what Deontay Johnson is. That's why he was so successful last year. You mentioned the targets. He had 23% target share for the season. Not really indicative because he had multiple games, 6%, 3%, 9%, 9%, where it was sometimes it was drops and he got benched, but other times it was, oh, he got hurt again in the first quarter on the second series of the game. He had other games with 32, 32, 31, 35, 34. Like, he had a lot of big-time target share games.
Yeah, and I think this defense gets worse, and that means that the Steelers are going to have to throw to stay in the games. And I watched the first quarter, and it looks like Jeff Saturday was making quarterbacks use play action. I talked about the Steelers were 32nd in the NFL in play action last year, which is really bad. I don't know if that continues into the season with – did I say Saturday? I think it's Canada, not Jeff Saturday.
Yep.
But yeah. With Matt Canada, I really think that if he can put something that looks closer to a modern NFL offense and get some motion in this, it benefits everybody. And then last but not least, I think just based on what both you and I have said, there are really good breakouts in these like third through sixth rounds. So if you are drafting, please draft running back to start right now.
Yeah. It just isn't like a... There are such, you know, like it depends on where the draft board falls to you. But if you're in a position to snag like one of those top seven or eight running backs, you better do it, because yeah, what you were about ready to say is it's very receiver friendly in like rounds 3 through 6.
Yeah. I mean, I dug hard because I really wanted to find a running back I could really tout.
Me
here.
Too. Me
and
too.
I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. It just, there are guys here who can have top 12 seasons. Even like Miles Gaskins in this range, I'm high on. A top 12 season for him would be like an absolute smash. Like, you would be, it would just be amazing. I mean, guys don't do it here.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% with you. And I agree that that's probably the big takeaway from doing this list, is that range for running back, it's just, you can find some guys who can start for you, but it's uninspiring to say the least. And you are a lot more likely to draft your league winner at wide receiver in this range. And at the end of the day, that's kind of what you're looking for in these rounds. You want a guy who can play for you, obviously, but you want upside. Because the thought is that everyone's high draft picks are going to mostly be good. The real difference makers, obviously, if you have like a Christian McCaffrey, like the stud of studs, but even if you have him and he has a historic season, like a lot of times leagues are won and lost off of the undrafted quarterback who's a QB5 and the guys in the middle rounds who break out versus the guys who flame out.
And we did everybody who listens to our podcast a favor today, because we did not include Mecole Hardman in our sleepers. It was
the Mecole Hardman Memorial List. That's right.
It was agreed upon that we would not talk about him here, but I am going to tell you, both Evan and I think he's a sleeper, and it is Mecole breakout season. So please draft Mecole Hardman. This is the time, I believe.
I hope so. And on that note, that is going to do it for episode 40 of the Half Point Per Podcast. Follow on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, subscribe on YouTube. You know how to find us at this point. Half Point Per Pod. Link to all of those things will be in the show notes. Anywhere you listen to your podcasts is where you can find us. Spotify, Apple, you name it, we're probably there. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we will talk to you guys next week with our bus. And that is always, probably, I would say, in general, everyone's favorite fantasy football topic of the season. Get to kind of be Grim Reaper for a lot of guys here. So we'll talk to you all next week.